The Wisconsin Department of Justice is investigating another officer-involved shooting at a high school, this time in Oshkosh. Police say a student with a weapon confronted a school resource officer at Oshkosh West this morning. They haven't released many details. They say there were gunshots and both the officer and student were injured. The school was placed on lockdown, as were all the middle schools in the city. That incident comes a day after an officer-involved shooting at Waukesha West High School. Police there say a 17-year-old student pulled a gun in a classroom and refused to put it down. The school resource officer called for backup. When they arrived, the student pointed the gun at police officers. One responding officer then shot him. No one died and no one else was injured in either incident. Districts around the state are revisiting their safety and security measures to prevent a tragedy from happening in their schools. David Perodin is a professor in the School of Education at Viterbo University in La Crosse, a former school administrator and author of the book School of Errors, Rethinking School Safety in America. He's host of the Safety Doc podcast. His website is safetyphd.com. David, welcome back to Central Time.
Rob, thank you for having me back on Central Time.
And what's your reaction to these two officer-involved shootings, not what we would think about in the mass shooting category, obviously, in schools?
Absolutely. Well, this is stunning. It brings much anxiety to Wisconsin, frightened students, parents, and teachers. I've spoken to several school superintendents, and they are very concerned and also wanting to know what to do next.
And you've written, and we'll touch on what you wrote in your book. We talked about your book a while back, but you say a lot of what we do in our schools to prevent and react to shootings is a lot of money that doesn't necessarily make anybody safer.
Absolutely. We can't fortify our way to safety. I spoke with superintendents this morning. They told me they have already received calls from vendors wanting to sell them safety products, such as window films, fences, metal detectors. And this is not the solution to school safety. We also have schools who want to screen, to potentially profile who's the next student who could become the school shooter. There is not a profile of a school shooter. But this is intense pressure placed upon superintendents and school leaders and school boards right now. They're just looking at what to do.
I see the phrase threat assessment coming up a lot when it comes to schools these days. They don't necessarily use the word profile. Is there a way to say, okay, can we figure out our next risk, our biggest risk, without it being in that so-called profiling category?
Sure. Well, absolutely. We don't want to profile, but threat reporting. And there's a term, leakage. Leakage is when residue is left online. Somebody makes a social media post that they were going to bring harm to the school, bring harm to themselves. Helping students with see something, say something. When I talk to superintendents, that's where they're putting their efforts right now, working with their staff, working with their students. If you identify something with a gut feeling, a tacit knowledge, your instinct, something that doesn't seem right, come forward and share that information.
On the other hand, so we've got these two incidents at schools we talked about. Also, there's reporting that there were four, you know, online threats. Don't come to school. There's going to be a shooting, or I'm going to do something. And sometimes it's just, you know, when we were teenagers, we sometimes said stupid stuff. How do we distinguish that from a real threat?
Right. Well, Rob, unfortunately, today it's a very thin line. We have to take every threat extremely seriously and investigate to a complete conclusion. So there isn't this leeway. You know, 30 years ago in Wisconsin, it was common for high school parking lots during deer hunting season to have gun racks, and students would have guns. The culture has changed, and we have to emphasize the point that in 75% of school shootings, somebody else knew, at least one other person knew. Multiple studies coming out and revealing that information. That's where we need to put our resources, because the shootings that have happened in the last few days, the mass shootings that are happening, they used to be 5 to 8 minutes. Rob, they're right now between 15 seconds and 60 seconds. So we've got to get on the threat identification side, because we're not going to be quick enough to fortify our way to safety when something unfolds this rapidly.
So say a school administrator or teacher or janitor, it can be sometimes, gets that tip from a student. Hey, I think so-and-so, they're making these threats. They're talking. I know they have firearms. What's the next step in that situation to evaluate and figure out what you do?
Right. Absolutely. If it is a threat of harm to self or others might involve firearms, that is an immediate call to the police. Also, the school, if there's concerns that a student might be presenting with depression, isolation, schools do have counselors, they do have threat assessment teams, student wellness teams that then they can use to identify if this is, the student needs additional resources from the community.
Right, because if you have that student in that borderline zone, if they do go forth and commit that shooting, that's one thing. How do you intervene before then, but in a way that doesn't ruin that kid's life if they had that potential to turn things around?
Right. That's a terrific question. And we do have laws in place, FERPA Privacy Act laws, which are very robust in protecting the identity of students. So if we're pairing up the resources, the mental health services, medical interventions for students, and making sure that our FERPA protections are intact, that usually goes a long way in making sure that we're meeting the needs of students without putting, a scarlet letter on them of, once you've done this, how are you going to reintegrate into the school system, your community, your family, so forth. It's really tricky.
We're talking about school safety with David Perodin, professor at Viterbo University, author of the book School of Errors, Rethinking School Safety in America, after two police-involved shootings at Wisconsin high schools in the last couple days, looking at what schools can do to make sure kids stay safe. David, a big part of your book, I know, is talking about this idea of training students and staff in situational awareness. What does that look like?
Situational awareness is understanding what is happening around you at all times. And we can do this in very simple ways in schools, taking students around the campus. What did you hear? What did you smell? What did you see? What was different? Maybe put some things out that are a little atypical, the scent of oranges, for example. But activities like that, situational awareness. I was interviewing a caver from Lake Tahoe, who rescues people from caves, and he talked about his practice of situational awareness is simply watching people in public spaces and trying to anticipate what they do next. So there are many ways that we can get at this, but we don't have a movement toward that because vendors and marketers cannot sell you situational awareness. And we know that school safety is a $3 billion industry. So you're going to get marketed just as what's happening right now, school superintendents getting calls from vendors, let me sell you this because of two shootings in Wisconsin.
And what a lot of schools already are doing and maybe considering doing if they're not already is a mass shooter drill. What are we getting right or wrong when it comes to those?
What we get right is if we put objectives to those drills. Are we trying to identify the perimeter that will be around a school? Are two-way radios working? Have we communicated to parents not to rush to the school because then it makes it very difficult to get assets to the school? I know that was an issue with Waukesha. I talked to somebody who was on scene there. So those are the types of things we want to consider. What we get wrong with drills is when we go hyper-realistic, when we just terrify students and staff and introduce drill trauma, make kids afraid to go to school and staff terrified and parents terrified. That is not the response that is effective.
So a school administrator calls you, after the show today and says, okay, we saw this in Waukesha, we saw this in Oshkosh, we're watching around the country. What are my next steps? What do you tell them?
Absolutely. So I got that question several times today. We've done this, we've done this, we've done this. What do we do next? And what you do next is you emphasize, see something, say something. You go back with all of your students at all levels, and you also introduce that to the student, to the parents. If you sense something isn't right that your child is saying or their friends are saying, that again, a gut instinct, bring it forward. Either report it to the counselor. If it's a threat of harm to self or others, report it to the police. But revisit, go there right now. This isn't the time to check if you have bulletproof film on your windows or anything like that. See something, say something now.
How about dialing down the anxiety level for everybody involved? Because we see responses from teachers who are at these schools, students at these schools, and kids in other schools are watching this and thinking, "Are we next? How do we prepare for these safety issues without ruining everybody's lives and making them scared all the
time?" Right, and that's a complicated. That's a tricky question because it's saturated on media and on what they're reading, and the fact that this happens close by. People have been to Waukesha and Oshkosh, right? So what we need to do is to listen to students, give students a voice. It's called Youth Code of Silence. Do focus groups, allow students to tell you what they're feeling, allow parents to tell you what they're feeling. Your school counselors are great at this. Their school psychology organization, your school psychologist, NASP, has an excellent protocol for having those discussions of returning to school, having school be a safe place, and really empowering students. We want students to come forward and share information. That happens, Rob, a lot, and it's been recognized a lot lately. So that has been a successful model we need to put more steam behind.
I wanted to ask about the role of school resource officers, both central parts of the story in the Waukesha and Oshkosh cases here. What's your view of the role of the SRO, so-called?
So I think the SRO is a tremendous asset to a school district. I, of course, don't know anything in depth about what has happened in these two instances. With schools, it is a delicate balance with an SRO because some schools don't know where school discipline stops and SRO intervention begins. So I was talking with some people in Texas, and they were frustrated because in their schools, the SROs, for example, were the ones handling if a student didn't have their ID that day, and that really should have been an administrator. Do we really want an SRO to be contacting a student and have that relationship kind of frictional from that point of view? So I think there's a lot of work to be done on how SROs are trained, how they interact. Texas is doing that right now.
And getting back to your main idea that see something, say something, and the situational awareness, again, you can't buy that stuff. How can schools train in that?
Sure. So I wrote about it in my book. There are different activities. One is Kim's Game, where you have so many things on a table, you try to remember them, you recall them. Again, going around your environment, what's different, watching people, trying to predict what's next. This sounds super, right? Super easy. Mm-hmm. And it's actually very effective. We know that this works in military training snipers. It's been used in the Scouts for over 120 years. And again, we know that 75% of the time, per the National Threat Assessment Center in 2018, the most recent study, somebody else knew and didn't tell. So we need to have our kids be very aware of what's happening. They detect it. They bring it forward. We're not working on awareness, and we're not looking at the systems that identify the threats and how kids are reporting. We're not asking those questions.
David, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's David Perodin, professor in the School of Education at Viterbo University in La Crosse, former school administrator, and author of the book School of Errors, Rethinking School Safety in America. We talked to them about various measures schools take to prevent school shootings and react to them when they happen.